Before we begin, I want to take a second to say thank you to everyone who's listening, and especially to those who donated during our recent fall fund drive. You know who you are. Your contributions help us to continue to bring great news, entertainment, and music directly into your earholes, and that means a lot to us. So thanks. Welcome to Local Exposure, a podcast about music and the greater Cincinnati scene. I'm Jim Nolan. Mark Messerly has been a key figure in the Cincinnati music scene for quite some time, known both as a member of the band Wussy, as well as for his longtime partnership with songwriter Brian Ewing. Messerly's newest project, called Inert, is anything but. Inert is a wonderfully dynamic, artistic collaboration project that brings together some of the biggest and best names in local music. As I sat down with Mark to talk about his roots as a musician, I discovered in him a delightfully kind-hearted and self-deprecating person who measures success by the joy created in others and not in the elevation of himself. Along the way, we talked about his musical heroes, balancing band life with day jobs, and the joys of touring when you're 50. Mark Messerly, thanks for coming in. It's nice to meet you.
Good to meet you too. Thank you.
I know a bit about your music as part of Wussy and obviously as part of Messerly and Ewing, but I'm curious to get a little more information from you about where you come from musically. What's your history?
Well, I'll just tell you this, my favorite story about where I came from, which was 10th grade. And I had recently fallen in love with Bruce Springsteen. So this was in that big gap between Nebraska and Born in the USA. The first time that I skipped school was to stay out all night long to get tickets for Springsteen at the Richfield Coliseum in Northern Ohio. It was the greatest thing. Everywhere, there's just this huge line of people. Everyone loves Springsteen. All right, so I get tickets, and then I go to see the show. And then somewhere near the end, somewhere maybe when the lights kick on and everyone's singing Born to Run, I just was like, this is what I want to do. I think I may have even literally pointed at the stage and said, this is what I want to do. And it's never changed. It's like, this is what I want to do. And it had nothing to do with the cheering of the crowds, because it didn't even occur to me that I could ever achieve that. But it was just that feeling of just freedom. It was catharsis and freedom and joy. And it's like, if I could make people feel like that, that's what I want to do. And that's pretty much where I come from. So Springsteen is a huge guiding light. But then I went to Berklee College of Music, learned audio engineering, and then just kind of did the slow climb of open mics. And Brian and I met, and we put out, I don't know, like 5 albums, and Wussy started. And just it's the biggest compliment that the musicians that I know can give someone is to call them a lifer. Like, you're a lifer. It's just what you do. You know, it doesn't really, you know, it's great if someone shows up, but yeah, you know, if they don't, yeah, so be it. You just keep doing it.
Do you feel like a lifer now?
Oh, yeah. I love it.
How long have you been playing?
Well, I mean, I just turned 50, so I'm up to 30 years now, wow. Approximately. Poorly, most of it. It took me a lot longer to get good at any of this stuff than maybe some other people. And that's one of the things about Wussy, getting to go on tour so much later in life, because Chuck was the only one who'd done a lot of touring. Well, Chuck and John. And I didn't really start touring until maybe late 30s, early 40s. Like, man, this would have felt a lot better if I was in my 20s. Wow, sleeping on floors is great.
That brings up a really interesting question. By the time most people are in, say, their 30s or 40s, they're kind of established already in their careers. And so taking time off work is obviously really difficult. How do you manage that?
Well, being a school teacher has been pretty much the reason that I've been able to tour. And Wussy's been very accommodating in scheduling most of our tours during summer break. You know, we can spring break, we can head to the East Coast, do shows. So, but it's mostly been because I'm a teacher that I've been able to do it. And most of the people in Wussy have fairly flexible types of careers. So really, I was the stick in the mud. Again, we were just too old. Like, we were never going to be able to spend a whole year out on the road. It's just, we don't make money. And I'm not complaining by any stretch, but we just try not to lose money. So when we come back from being on tour, if we have no bills and no debts and we can each walk away with a couple $100, that's like the brass ring for a band at our level. So, oh no, the other brass ring is we finally, after the last couple of tours, have been able to get two hotel rooms a night. Because for those first couple of tours, it was all five of us and whoever was traveling with us, packed in one room. But it's also an adventure. They're good stories. I love it. And that's that thing, going back to that lifer thing. I actually love it. It's brutal sometimes, and you might be tired, but it's just such an adventure. And at the end of every day, I get to play music in front of a crowd. And Wussy is lucky enough to have fans who will show up. It might be 12, it might be 50, but the people are genuinely happy to see us. Because again, we don't tour a lot. So this might be the one time we show up in the town. And man, if you can't feel some sense of just exhilaration when something you've made is being kind of, that energy is coming back to you with these wonderful people who come to our shows, then you probably shouldn't do it. Because it just, I find it to be really, really fulfilling.
And so based on what you've been saying, is that how you measure success?
That's how I measure success, yes. You know, if it was the 80s or even up into the 90s when you could make money selling records, then maybe I'd think, well, it'd be, you know, maybe I'll make some money. But since I've had any kind of little bit of success, money's just, it's just not on the table. Where would we make money? People don't buy CDs, and we sell, you know, enough CDs to pay for the next record. It's just the business is really, really weird. If we wanted to make enough money to live, we would have to tour all year, but we would just make enough money for that year. We wouldn't make enough money, and it would, of course, kill us because we're really old. It's truly exhausting. So so I guess that took the money as being part of success right off the table, because it just doesn't really exist unless you win the lottery and get something in a movie or TV. I don't know. I don't even know how that would work. So to me, success is two things. One, continuing to be able to create music. And then two, being able to make connections with people. Both those things are, well, I mean, that's why I do it.
Well, and then also continuing to talk about Wussy, I know that your band has a big following in certain areas. Like I know the Seattle area, for instance, is really big for you guys. What other areas does Wussy consider like a second home?
New York is really good for us, but the Pacific Northwest is probably our best because KEXP has jumped on board really early, and man, props. We, St. Louis, because there's a station out there that, and they have Twang Fest, so we've got a good crowd there. But real, if we were to say the two big places, it's Pacific Northwest and then a little bit of the Eastern Seaboard corridor, you know, Boston, New York, DC's coming along, you know, but yeah, that's it. There's, we're not that popular.
Well, then of course you have the hometown crowd who always loves Wussy.
Yeah, thank you.
So let's talk a bit about this new project. It's called Inert.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious about the name. Do you happen to be a big fan of science?
I love science, but to be honest, I was at the Air Force Museum with my boys, and there was an airplane that just had this sticker on it with sans serif block printing. It just said inert on it. And I looked at it and said, that would be a great name for a project. So I took a picture of it, and I just had that in my head for several years. I also like the kind of little joke about, like, rock and roll is supposed to be passionate and spontaneous, so I'm going to name it about something that is non-reactive. So it's just one of those little things I do to make myself giggle. And also, like, Messerly and Ewing, I don't want to do anything with my name in it ever again. So even if it is a project that is kind of mine, I'd rather have there be a name with it. So anyway, yes, it really just came down to seeing the word written on a sticker on a plane and going, yeah, I like that.
I get a strong sense of playfulness in the music of this album. And I'm really curious about how far back some of these songs go in your career. How old are some of these songs?
Well, I should probably back up and say that I actually finished this album maybe almost 2 years ago. I loved the making of the record, But I was overwhelmed, or I just couldn't bring myself to go through the process of putting it out there, because that's the hard part, like promoting it. You know, how am I going to sell the record? I don't have a band. I think one song would be like maybe 5 years, but most of the songs were written in about a year before we recorded the record. With the nature of what I wanted to do with this record, I wanted to have the songs really locked down tight, where I knew them in and out and was happy with everything. So I spent probably about a year polishing the songs and then went in the studio and made them. As far as like anyone who would come see my shows, they're brand new songs because I have not played out with them. But honestly, the reason that I finally got up the energy to put out this record is that I wanted to make a new record. It's like, ooh, I have new songs. I want to make a new record. And that little voice in my head said, dude, you can't make a new record. You haven't put out the last one. I'm like, fine, I'll put it out. You know, I mean, it's more fun to make them than sell them. So, you know, I got a little lazy. There's no like way, way old songs. Before Messerlin Ewing kind of took an extended break, there was maybe two songs on this record from those last sessions, and then then a whole bunch after that.
Do these songs sound significantly different to you from Messerlin Ewing songs?
Yes and no. You know, when you've been writing songs as long as I have, there's only so far you can get out of your own wheelhouse. So I don't know that there's any songs that Messerlin Ewing couldn't have done, but what feels different for me was the approach to it. The thing with being in a duo is that you've got veto power on both sides, and so it's a very intense collaboration, and it was a blast. But the thing that changed with this one is that I didn't have to get approval for anything from anyone, which that sounds egotistical, but it was very freeing. But here, the thing that was really important to me was that I have no interest in doing something by myself anymore. So there's that, and it sounds like those are opposite things. I wanted freedom, but I have no desire to do anything by myself. I'm not that interesting. It is proven to me over and over again that the more creative people who are willing to jump in on any idea I have, it's going to become exponentially more interesting and better. Wussy is keeping me really busy. I don't want to start on a whole new band, and I want to work with other people. So how do I do this? I wanted to just, the word that I just over and over went through my head with this project was collaboration. I just wanted to just get as many amazing people who are willing to come in and let's just see what we could create.
So before we go too much further into talking about the collaborations in this project, I want to pause for just a second and take a listen to some music from this album. I have to tell you, I had a really hard time picking one song. I feel that this album is sort of all over the place, but in a very positive way. There's a really wide variety of sounds and of influences that are noticeable throughout this album. So I had a really hard time finding that one track that exemplifies this is what Inert sounds like. So I ended up just picking a track that I really just love the energy of this song, and that is the song called Fail You. I just think it flows so well, and it has, like I said, such great energy, and it's just plain fun to listen to. So this is the track Fail You by Inert.
With his whisper goodbye.
The very first sound that you hear when you listen to this album is you going, and it's that deep sigh that says, okay, here we go.
Yeah, that was one of those things that when it got left on the mixes. I loved the start of that. There were, you know, it was just this, that kind of taking a breath before you sing. But yeah, it does, and especially with the name of that song is called Slow Suicide. So it's not a super cheerful song. But one of the things with that was really cool about the way that song was done, it was me, Kate Wakefield playing cello, and John Earhart on pedal steel. It was just us three. And we just sat in a circle, and there were just microphones all around us. So everything that we did all was bleeding into everyone's microphones. And there was no possibility of overdubs. Well, that's not true. The strings at the end, Kate added. But as far as the, you'll hear. When you hear the record, you'll know what I'm talking about. But anyway, John Hoffman, who engineered it, he's like, we're not going to be able to do anything to this. Whatever happens now, you know, is going to be on there. And it's like, perfect. That's what I want. So yeah, I think the sigh was going to be there whether we wanted it to or not. But yeah, thank you. Those little things tickle me about records.
And this album was recorded at Ultra Suede, right?
Yes.
You've already mentioned a couple of the artists that you've worked with on this project. You mentioned Kate. You mentioned John. I was wondering if you could just take a minute and list off just some of the names who also were a big part of this project.
Well, let's see. John Curley from the Afghan Whigs. All of Wussy played on it. John Hoffman and Jerry Queen from Vacation and Swim Team. Kate Wakefield, who's in Lung and does her solo stuff. Gosh, guys from the band Clifford Never Knew. So that would be Eric Appleby and Pete Janidlo. And then I got some kids from SCPA to come in and play strings. My stepson, who won the Corbett at SCPA for a jazz composition, he came in and played organ and piano, which was just the coolest thing. And then, gosh, who knows who else? And we did most of it over a weekend, so it was a blast.
Wow. So it's kind of just a big party of music.
Yeah, exactly. My strategy was that I'm going to go with a baseball analogy. You know, it's down to pitching. I'm going to go with pitching over hitting. If you don't have pitching, you're done. And in bands, if you don't have a solid rhythm section, by which I mean the drummer and the bass player, you're done. And that to me is the thing that takes the longest for bands to gel, to get the rhythm section, you know, together. So I was like, I'll just steal rhythm sections, and then I can surround those rhythm sections with anything and it'll be solid. So John Curley and Joe Klug were in Staggering Statistics together, so they were good. Of course, Joe, you know, and Wussy and me, and then Bill Donabedian and Sean Riney, they were Messerling Young's rhythm section, so I grabbed them for a bunch of songs. And so that was the thing. So we had morning this rhythm section come in and surround them with whatever people I thought might be fun for those songs. But there is a song in there called Coming Down, which was supposed to be a kind of delicate little mandolin and guitar number. And everyone was like, well, we want to play on that too. And so everyone just piled in and turned it into this, like, you know, just kind of little barn burner song. And that was the kind of magic that I was hoping would happen. It's like, yeah, let's just go take it wherever you guys are feeling it. It was just a big musical party.
Well, it sounds like you just had super strong foundations to build upon.
The thing about being 50 and knowing all these musicians who are in there, you know, who have been doing it a long time, I realized that they're really good at what they do. And that, so if you get someone like John Curley or Chuck Cleaver, their first ideas are going to be awesome. But like, do you really need to beat that idea into the ground? All right, that's a great idea. Let's play it 100 times and then go record in the studio. I thought, my songs are fairly simple. You know, it's not prog rock by any stretch of the imagination. So I thought, all right, what if I get the songs really like solid, and then I can go in and just turn these amazing musicians loose. There were about half the songs on the record had no rehearsal. I gave them copies of the demos so they could listen to them. But like the song Whispering, that's take number 2, second time it was ever played with those musicians. Because seriously, they're that good. Their first ideas are going to be amazing. I'm a warts and all kind of person. Chuck Cleavers always talks about that those are the favorite moments of records. The creaking chair, the string that, you know, pops, something that makes it human. You know, and so that anything that connects you to the humanity of a recording is to me a wonderful thing.
I know I've said this before, but I feel that John Hoffman is one of those people that one of his greatest skills is being able to find those unique serendipitous moments in a recording and just taking those moments and letting them be.
Oh yeah. Our first record with John was, it was like just what we needed. When you've made records a certain way, to have someone come in and shake up the process is the greatest gift you can give. And he worked so fast. He's like, let's do that, let's do that, let's do that. And just this energy and also just a willingness to be like, all right, yeah, sure, let's make some more noise. And you're like, we were jumping up and down. So yeah, he's a blast to work with. Super creative, good at his job, but also like just that energy.
I'm really glad you mentioned that because there are some wonderful moments in this album where, and I'm going to use big fat air quotes here, you blend these pretty sounds with these ugly sounds. For instance, there's a track called All the Way Down where you have a string section performing, but then in the background you have these screeching and groaning sounds going on that really just give the song so much flavor.
That is the one thing that being in Wussy has, I think, most influenced me, other than just getting to observe Lisa and Chuck's, especially their lyric writing. You know, it's like going to school. But the biggest influence I think Wussy has had on me is I really love noisy stuff now. It almost doesn't feel like a song unless there's some just somewhere in there that dissonance, that little creeping oddness, or just the beautiful oddness of it. At the end of the Slow Suicide, Kate Wakefield, she just was running her fingers up and down the strings, and it just ends with this kind of weird sounds, and it just is perfect. And as it's fading away, and you just hear this kind of like oddness. I don't know. I love me some good noise, but it's certainly not a noise record. But yeah, I don't know. I can't really. It's just purely something that I enjoy now. I love melody. That's all. I've always just tried to be a pop writer. That's what I do, it's what I try to do, is just come up with really pretty melodies. So to mess those up, that's fun.
When you mentioned earlier about your wheelhouse, and from listening to this album, to me, your wheelhouse is definitely in that 80s college rock, indie rock kind of sound, like, for instance, R.E.M.
You can never insult me with an R.E.M. comparison. They're heroes, not just... Everything about R.E.M. is awesome, at least, you know, when Bill Berry was still in the band. Mike Mills, he's I don't know, maybe one of my top favorite bass players. Oh, just everything about him. Yeah, they're absolutely wonderful.
So we've talked about the collaborations in the making of the music of this album. But one thing we haven't touched on yet are the collaborations that you've engaged in the actual physical packaging of this album, which I think is incredibly interesting because there's a lot of really cool stuff going on here.
Thank you. This was, again, going back to me thinking all these collaborations were happening musically, and yet I'm really lucky to know all these super creative people who are amazing at their jobs, but this doesn't happen to be music. I know poets. I know Chuck and Betsy, who run Aurora Press. They put out their own journals, and I've even written for them. Like, all right, so we've got poets that I know, photographers. Michael Wilson shot for Wussy, and Sean Hughes, Michael Kearns, these amazing people. I was like, how can I do something where I get to collaborate with them too? It was just pure selfishness on my part. It's like, I wanna do, what can I do where I get to work with them too? So my idea was that I will just make 100 physical copies, because I figured that's about what I can sell. And I will invite upwards of 20 artists, writers, visual artists, and photographers, and we'll make it like the toy in the cereal box. Each person will create 5 pieces, whether it's one copy, whether it's 5 different ones, and then each CD will have an original piece of artwork created for the project in it, and then when you buy the record, you get the music with all those collaborations, and then you pull out a piece of art and you don't know what it's going to be, but it will be from a local artist. Oh my gosh, I literally just gave myself chills, because they've been handing these pieces of art in, because it's coming out on the 13th, and they're amazing. They're just wonderful, these creations. I mean, they really are genuinely unique pieces of art that we get to put in it. So yeah, there's going to be 100 of those, and when they're gone, I'm going to throw the music on Bandcamp, and it'll be digital, like all the kids like to listen to. And in some cases, what an interesting thing for me, it's all feeds my ego. That's, you know, that's just how it works. But like to send my record to someone and then have it reflected back to me in a different form, like Amy Purcell, who's a wonderful writer, she took lyrics from the record and turned them into haikus, but not just from like one each song. She cherry picked things that went together for her. And so I got to see my record almost like a cubist kind of thing, where suddenly it was refracted. And oh, I was just giddy. Like what it's just a neat thing to get to experience, like the different mirrors for what you did. And so yeah, I guess overuse the word, but it's been a complete joy.
You said the album comes out on October 13th.
Yes.
Are there going to be shows?
Yeah. Well, there's one show that is going to be at the Comet, and we're going to play the whole record from beginning to end. And I'd say 3/4 of the people who played on the record will come out and we'll recreate it. I'm excited about this too, because Kate Wakefield is opening up. And seriously, anyone listening to this, Kate Wakefield is one of the just most deeply creative people I've ever met. She's all over this record, and pretty much the things that I like about this record are almost always what Kate did. And Lung is amazing too. And John Earhart played, he's the only person who played on every track, I think, and he's going to be there. So anyway, so Kate Wakefield's opening up, then we're going to play the record, and then a brand new iteration of the old Clifford Never Knew band. They've reformed as Never Knew, and they made a record, and it's like Jawbreaker, but like an artsy Jawbreaker. It's absolutely wonderful, and then they'll tear the roof off the joint. And then the CDs will be there for sale. Oh, and also first $500 will go to Melodic Connections. Melodic Connections is an organization that brings music to people with special needs, all ages. For instance, to give an idea of one of the things they do, because this is the most recent thing I did with them, they had a jam session, and so they invited me, and Jake Speed's done it, Ricky Nye has done it, and you go in there, and they've got a songbook, and you bring in some songs you know, and they just have all these instruments, and the members of Melodic Connection, they show up and you just jam. They can play any instrument they want, and you can go there if you have someone you know who might not thrive in a traditional music setting. They have lots of instruments that accommodate. They do some really good work. So yeah, that's one of those just neat things that are happening in town that you may not know about. Again, I collaborate with them sometimes too, and I just, at this stage of the game, to make it all about me didn't feel right. And to ask all these people to contribute just for my own kind of project didn't feel right. So, like, let's take the music and the art we made and send some of it to Melodic Connections.
Well, Mark, I'm really grateful that you took the time to stop in and speak with me today.
Oh my gosh, what a blast. Thank you.
As we leave, I want to let you pick another track from the album for us to listen to play us out.
Okay, so purely for my ego, I want to play All the Way Down. And here's why. Because one of the reasons I did this project was there's little boxes that you want to check off in your life, your bucket list, for lack of a better thing. And one of the things I always wanted to do was write a string arrangement. This is the one thing that was not as collaborative. I wrote a string quintet part. And so it's all strings. I is like no acoustic guitars, nothing else. It's my my wife, Holly J, and me singing, and then these string parts. So whether it's a good song or not, I don't even care. I got to write my string part.
Well, from the bucket list of Mark Messerly, this is All the Way Down by Inert.
1, 2, 3, 4. All the way down, all the way down. way down, all the way down, all the way down, you said nothing. Oh, all the way down, all the way down, all the way down, you said nothing, nothing, nothing at all.
Thanks again to Mark Messerly for stopping by the WVXU studios to tell me more about Inert. Look for the album to release October 13th with the release party that same night at the Comet in Northside. For links to the album, the band, and other information, you can visit our website at wvxu.org/lx. Local Exposure is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio and 91.7 WVXU. This episode was recorded and produced by me, Jim Nolan, with some serious above and beyond help by Josh Elstro. Thanks, Josh. The theme music for this episode is by Scott Holmes and comes from the Free Music Archive. Find out more at freemusicarchive.com. Until next time.